course, Britain spends far too much on defence. Everybody knows that.
Carol Barber, formerly a high-ranking civil servant in the Ministry of Defence.
One of the major problems is the ever-increasing costs of new weapon systems. And the more sophisticated they become, the less efficient they in practice turn out to be.
In February of this year, Carol Barber was forced to leave her job at the height of the political storm arising out of the abortive Sea Snake torpedo project.
And Sea Snake is a good example of that. It was so incredibly sophisticated that it didn't actually work at all.
This week on Delve Special, we look at the Sea Snake torpedo project and assess how this fiasco reflects on Britain's defence industry. Specifically, we shall be asking this crucial question. Isn't there something badly wrong with a business which caters to the darkest, most evil side of human nature and still makes a loss? To understand the reasons why the Sea Snake torpedo project was initiated, it's first necessary to review Britain's defence policy as a whole. To this end, I went to speak to the junior minister responsible for ordering Sea Snake, Norman Gresham. I asked him first why we spend so much more on defence than many of our NATO allies.
If you want the very best, you must be prepared to pay for it. We do, and we get it. The British Army is universally respected as the most highly trained professional army in the world.
Yes. But, of course, most of it is in Germany, isn't it?
Yes, it remains in a constant state of readiness to defend against any attack.
To defend the Germans against any attack?
Yes.
Meanwhile, if we here at home in Britain were to be attacked, we'd have to rely on the weekend soldiers of the Territorial Army, wouldn't we?
Yes, that's true. Fortunately, we also have the most highly trained amateur army in the world.
Most of the RAF is abroad too, isn't it?
Yes.
And the Royal Navy. A lot of that is a good long way away, I understand.
Yes, but I'm sure they'd rush back pretty quickly if they heard we're in trouble.
Minister, why does so much of this country's defence budget go towards the cost of stationing British servicemen abroad?
Because we have vital British installations abroad, which must at all times be safeguarded.
What sort of installations are these?
All sorts. Air bases, barracks, Royal Navy dockyards. We could hardly leave them undefended now, could we?
Yes, but if you ordered them all to be dismantled, they wouldn't need defending, would they?
No, but the people who are dismantling them would, wouldn't they, David?
Now, isn't the real reason that we maintain these bases abroad because of some outdated view about Britain's role in international affairs, you know, that we should be, for some reason, the world's policeman?
No, I don't think it's outdated at all. We have the finest system of law and order in the world, so naturally we feel it's our duty to share it with the rest of the world. It's the noble thing to do.
Yes, but leaving aside the rather, if I may say, so questionable morality of interfering in the affairs of other nation states, we can't actually afford to behave in this way, can we?
Not really, no. That's what makes it all the more noble.
One of the most controversial areas of Britain's conventional defence policy concerns the modern role of the Royal Navy, of which Admiral Sir William Torrington Howes is one of the most vociferous proponents. I asked him what exactly the Navy's modern role is.
The Navy has many important peacetime roles, one of the most important being to travel abroad and show the flag.
Do we need to show the flag?
We most certainly do, yes.
Why?
Because otherwise foreigners might forget what it looks like.
And would that actually be so terribly bad a thing?
Don't you like our flag, Mr. Lander?
Well, I think it's fine. I just wonder why we have to spend so much money showing it to foreigners, that's all.
It's an investment. Trade follows the flag, Mr. Lander. Every Royal Naval rating who goes ashore acts as an ambassador, spreading the word for Britain and British goods.
So these sailors go ashore to all the bars of the world and talk about trade, then, do they?
Some of the time, yes.
Most of the time they talk about women and beer, don't they, Admiral?
British beer, Mr. Lander.
I see. Well, leaving aside the question of the Navy's modern role, then, why do you go on asking for more and more large surface ships when experience has shown that such ships are fatally vulnerable to sea skimming missiles?
That is, of course, an argument for more large surface ships, not less.
It is? Why?
Well, obviously, if they're that vulnerable to attack, we're going to need a lot more of them to get the job done.
And what job would that be?
Whatever job happens to call for the use of large surface ships.
Like showing the flag?
Exactly. Flags look much better on large surface ships.
Former civil servant Carol Barber again.
By the end of the 1970s, it was obvious that because of the spiralling cost of defence, Britain could no longer maintain at their existing levels both the British Army and the Royal Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was commissioned by the minister, Norman Gresham, to write a report stating which should suffer massive cuts, and I chose the Royal Navy.
Why?
Well, the reasons are quite complicated, involving a lot of international politics, but Basically, what it comes down to is that the Germans won't let us have our army back.
Did the minister act on your report?
He didn't get the chance. The Navy had somehow already got wind of the report and waded in with a report of their own, outlining frightening evidence of sudden recent advances in Soviet technology which threatened the entire fleet. The minister got very alarmed.
But why? I thought the plan was to reduce the fleet anyway.
Yes, but it's one thing for us to threaten the fleet. It's quite another for the Russians to do it.
I see.
A minister can't cut back on a fleet because the Russians have rendered it obsolete. It's political suicide.
So what did he do, in fact?
He did the worst thing he possibly could have done. He asked the Navy for advice. They said our only hope would be if we could develop a new kind of torpedo. And that luckily, Remond Electronics had recently submitted some very promising designs for one. And the next day, a big new government contract was awarded to Remond's.
And what do you think was the decisive factor which convinced the minister to award the contract to Remond Electronics?
Simple. They would have gone bust otherwise. The minister couldn't possibly have allowed that to happen.
Because of their specialised knowledge in the field of high technology, I suppose.
No, because the factory's in a marginal constituency.
Even by defence establishment standards, Remond Electronics has had a controversial history, as defence journalist Charles Hadley explains.
George Remond set the company up in the 1950s with the original intention of exploring into the commercial possibilities of robots. Well, their first working model, the Remond R1, was capable of performing various simple functions such as knocking the top off a boiled egg.
See,
well, one day a research worker was knocked out when the machine hit him over the head with a spoon, and immediately the army became interested in the military potential of the Remond R1.
The Ministry of Defence will make no official comment about tests carried out by the army with the Remond R1. Instead, we have to rely on the testimony of men like Arthur Dodds.
One day, just after I'd become a Lance Corporal, I was ordered to report to a Captain Bowes, who had an office in a hush-hush part of the camp.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when I got there, he gave me a steel helmet and told me to put it on.
What did you have to do then?
Well, then he said I was to march into the next room, come to a halt on top of a cross painted on the floor, and stand there at attention, and on no account was I to look round.
And?
Well, I did this, and then the next thing I know, I'm waking up in hospital. Never did tell me what happened, but it happened to loads of my mates too.
See.
Of course, we know what it was now. We want compensation for it. We didn't ask to be hit on the head. We just went ahead and did it. Now we want what we're entitled to.
Arthur Dodd's story is typical of many told by men serving in his and other regiments at the time. From these, it's estimated that between 1961 and 1963, over 2,000 men were rendered unconscious in this way. Charles Hadley again.
Eventually, the research had to be abandoned because, try as they might, the army couldn't think of a way of enticing an enemy to enter a room one man at a time.
Of course,
the real significance of the tests was that it established Remond Electronics as an important defence contractor.
In addition to their defence work, Remonds have made the occasional foray into the civilian market and are about to launch a voice-activated telephone. Now, since for obvious reasons we can't test one of their military weapons, the voice-activated telephone provides us with a unique opportunity to assess Remond expertise in product manufacture. On the pretext of doing a radio programme on British ingenuity, I went to test it. I'm standing now in Remond's Civil Research Laboratory, and with me is their Civil Projects Director, Dr. Miriam Benchley. Hello, Miriam.
Hello, David.
Well, now, the telephone has already been programmed to respond solely to my voice, so now I understand that all I have to do is to speak into it one digit at a time, the number I wish to dial, and it will do the rest. Is that right?
That's right, David, yes.
All right, so here we go then. One.
Repeat, please.
What happens now?
You have to repeat the number. It didn't quite get it.
Oh, yes. One.
Repeat, please.
And again.
One.
Four.
No, one.
Four, three.
It's getting the wrong number. What should I do now?
Say error.
Error.
4-3-3.
No, error. 4-3-3-1-0-7-9.
Wait, please. I will get you your number.
Well, that's not it, Miriam, is it? What?
Keep saying error.
Error. Error. Error. Error. Error.
Hello?
No, error.
What?
Look, I'm sorry. You're not the person I wish to speak to. The telephone didn't hear me properly.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Obviously, it's not quite perfect yet.
No.
There are still one or two minor problems we've got to iron out.
It seems to me you've got more than just one or two.
Repeat, please.
No, no, not you. Error.
4, 3.
Oh, no, no, stop.
4, 3, 3.
Miriam.
1.
Keep saying error.
But it doesn't work, though, does it?
4, 3.
Error.
1, 0.
Error.
7.
Error.
Wait, please.
Error.
I will get you your
error.
Number.
Error. Error. Error.
Go away!
Reports of naval trials with sea snakes suggest that Bremen's expertise in the military field may be of a similar standard. Former Royal Naval Lieutenant Peter Cockcroft served aboard the submarine that conducted those trials. Now out of the Navy and living in France, he was able to speak to us about them.
We took the first sea snake out and fired it at a stationary floating target. At the time it was set to explode, nothing happened, so we assumed it had missed, and that was that. But 2 minutes later, we heard a noise approaching us. It was the torpedo coming back. Then there followed a pretty hairy 10 seconds before, whoosh, it missed us and shot off again. When the cheering died down, we realized it was coming back again. It went on like that for 2 days. We didn't dare move, and it was impossible to sleep, what with it whizzing past the conning tower every few minutes.
And then?
Well, eventually, it headed off into the distance and started housing a windsurfer before the French finally managed to capture it.
By now, spending on sea snake was rocketing out of control. To demonstrate this, I telephoned the Navy Division of the Ministry of Defence, claiming to be a representative of Remond Electronics Limited. This is what happened.
Navy accounts.
Hello, Remond Electronics here.
Oh, how much do you want?
We need another 2 million.
Oh, all right, the cheque'll be in the post.
Thank you. It was at about this time that Carol Barber, working at the Ministry of Defence, made a startling discovery.
I found a series of unanswered letters from Hinton Guidance Systems Limited, dating back 6 months, all asking if they could have their torpedo back.
Had you known that Hinton's had submitted a torpedo?
No, that's why I telephoned them.
I see.
They told me that their torpedo was capable of fulfilling all of the performance specifications laid down for Sea Snake at just under half the cost.
Yeah.
So, I spoke to Admiral Sir William Torrington Howe the following morning.
And what did he say?
At first, he was very offhand. He said it was not the Royal Navy's practice to encourage the sending of unsolicited torpedoes. So I said that surely the only thing that mattered was whether or not the Hinton torpedo worked. And he said, yes, well, unfortunately it didn't. He said the Navy had given it a proper trial and it had sunk.
Hinton Guidance Systems refused to talk to us. Clearly, they're too concerned that it might harm their prospects for winning future defence contracts. Fortunately, though, we were able to track down this man, now living abroad, who nevertheless wishes to remain anonymous.
I was a naval rating at the time. And about a year ago, me and two other blokes were told by Admiral Torrington Ellis that we'd been picked to perform a trial on a new torpedo. What we had to do was take the torpedo, put it in a sack, weigh the whole thing down with a couple of rocks, then get a boat, row out in the middle of a Scottish lock and dump it over the side.
Now tell me, is this the normal way the Royal Navy tests its new torpedoes?
No.
So you thought this was an unusual order to be given?
No.
Why not?
Because it was the Navy that gave it.
Why did Admiral Sir William Torrington Howe give such a strange order? Why was he so keen on promoting Sea Snake at all costs? I asked him.
The Sea Snake torpedo is a fine weapon which employs the very latest in sophisticated, state-of-the-art technology.
It doesn't work, though, does it?
No. That, unfortunately, is the state-of-the-art at the moment. But improvements are under consideration, and we continue to have the very highest hopes for this weapon.
Why, though, do you prefer it to the Hinton Guidance Systems torpedo, which does work?
Hinton's torpedo does not work. It failed our tests.
I understand it was dumped in a Scottish loch in a sack.
Yes. It failed the sack test.
Is it possible for a torpedo to pass such a test?
I cannot give details concerning the capabilities of our torpedoes.
But what would you say to someone who suggested that the Sea Snake project represents a grossly irresponsible waste of taxpayers' money?
It isn't taxpayers' money that we're using.
It came from taxpayers, didn't it?
Came from them, yes. But then they paid it to us. So it's ours now. You can't expect to hand something over and then be able to just demand it back when you feel like it. It's rude.
Carol Barber again.
I felt it was my duty to share what I suspected with the minister. So I went and told him that something shady was going on, which almost certainly meant that the ministry had been taken for a very large sum of money.
And what was his reaction?
Well, the minister thanked me for the information, and when I asked him what he was going to do about it, he said that there was only one thing he could do in the circumstances, and that was to try to cover it all up. I protested and left the room.
And then?
Well, the following day I received a note from the minister stating that he shared my enthusiasm for economy and therefore had decided to make me a defence cut.
I asked the minister why he had seen fit to sack Carol Barber.
You shouldn't jump to any conclusions about this unfortunate episode when you only have Ms. Barber's version of events to go on. You should keep an open mind, David.
We haven't jumped to any conclusions, Minister. That's why we're offering you this opportunity to give your version of events.
I cannot, of course, give my version of events for reasons of security.
Well, can you seriously expect us to assume that you had good reasons for sacking her if you're not prepared to tell us what they are?
If you keep an open mind, yes. Let's change the subject.
Hmm? Minister, are you confident that the decision to press ahead with the Sea Snake torpedo is in fact the right decision?
Absolutely. I'm sure that the trust we've placed in Remond Electronics will be amply rewarded in arms export sales. Remonds have a great talent for aggressive marketing.
But in what way is the Sea Snake better than the Hinton Guidance Systems torpedo, for instance?
I cannot answer that question, David, since it would involve disclosing information that would be of use to an enemy of the country.
Well, surely the public is entitled to know whether or not there has been a gross error of judgment in this matter.
Certainly not. Even if there had been a gross error of judgment, that is precisely the sort of information that would be useful to an enemy of the country.
Yes, but
it would show that there was a flaw in our decision-making process. We wouldn't want to admit that to anyone.
But Minister, when your party was in opposition, you pledged yourself absolutely to be in favour of open government.
I did, yes. I was very much in favour of open government.
But you aren't now?
No.
And why not?
Because it's a different government. I was in favour of open government when we were in opposition, because the government at the time weren't to be trusted. In fact, they were up to a great deal of mischief which needed to be exposed. My government isn't. So in our case, open government simply isn't necessary.
We decided to find out a little bit more about what Norman Gresham calls Remond's aggressive marketing techniques by tracking down one of their marketing employees, Teresa Mills. After sharing a bottle of vodka with her, I asked her if she agreed with the minister's assessment of the Remond marketing technique.
I can be really aggressive if they want me to be. It's up to the Admiral concerned, really. I just try to make them feel good, you know. See, it varies from country to country.
So do I.
You do get the occasional kinky one who likes to be tied up. Mm. But I'm not very keen on that. Tell you why.
Why?
Admirals tend to be fussy about what kind of knots you use. Yeah. I did a granny on one.
Granny?
And he stormed out in his underwear. No, he's always a difficult man to please, that one. Yeah. He keeps wanting me to kill for him. I said, I just don't have the facility.
Teresa Mills also told us of Remond's highly unusual Monday business lunches held in the private function room of the Stanby Hotel in Hampshire. So, last month, I went along to see if I could break into one. This is what happened.
I'm in the corridor now, just outside the private function room. I'm about to open the door and go in. I'm in the room now, and ahead of me, seated at the table, are two men, Admiral Sir William Torrington Howes, and there's George Remond.
Lander!
Hello, Mr. Lander. I don't believe we've met. I'm George Remond.
Yes, I know very well who you are, Mr. Remond.
Good, good. Well, then I'm sure you'll understand that you'll have to leave. This is a private business lunch.
Well, if it's a private business lunch, perhaps you could explain why those two nude women over there are mud wrestling.
Yes,
yes, unfortunately, there's been a mistake. It's a double booking, I'm afraid.
A double booking?
Yes, yes. Luckily, we've been able to arrive at an arrangement whereby we share the room and allow them to rehearse until their guests arrive.
You need a haircut, Lander.
Yes, I'm handling this, Admiral. Thank you. Alphonse!
Yes, sir?
Get the manager, would you?
Certainly, sir.
Lander! I'll have you taken out and flogged!
No, you can't have me flogged, Admiral. I work for the BBC. Now, before the manager gets here, perhaps you could tell me just exactly what it is you've been discussing here.
Certainly, yes. Business matters of a strictly confidential nature, Mr. Lander.
Well, if they're confidential, and yet somehow you're prepared to discuss them in front of two nude women mud wrestlers, were you?
Well, they obviously weren't listening.
I see.
You can see that they're totally occupied in other matters.
Well, let's go and see and find out if that's true, shall we? Excuse me, ladies. Good God. I'm David Lander from BBC Radio's Delve
programme...
Oh, we're saying nothing!
Did these men hire you to come here and do this?
Never seen him before. Double booking in
him. I'm afraid I must ask you to leave.
On what grounds?
Council fire regulations, I'm afraid, sir. There's too many people in here.
There's only five people in here.
We have a very strict council, sir. Goodbye.
When we subsequently informed George Remen that we intended to transmit that recording, he agreed to grant me an interview. I asked him first about his business lunches.
Our lunches are a useful way of getting to know our clients and talking about deals in an informal atmosphere.
Well, they're hardly informal, are they? In the past, they've involved belly dancers, strippers, and something called erotic tableaux.
I know, yes. The hotel has a very incompetent booking clerk. If it wasn't for the fact that the food is so good, we'd have given the place up years ago.
Are you saying that all of the entertainments that have appeared at your lunches are as a result of double bookings?
Yes, yes. I understand he's dyslexic.
Tell me about the Admiral's Singles Club.
What would you like me to tell you?
Well, isn't it an establishment owned by Remen Electronics where admirals of the world can go and pick up women?
It provides a service for admirals, yes.
Remen Electronics also runs an Admiral's Sauna and Massage Club, yes. An Admiral's Topless Disco, yes. And an Admiral's Video Nasty Cinema.
Well, of course, the Video Nasty Cinema is an important branch of our research. It is necessary for the armaments industry to keep up with all of the latest technology in this area.
Despite George Remen's explanations, as a result of our exposé, Admiral Sir William Torrington Howes resigned from the Navy 3 weeks ago. At the same time, the government cancelled Seasnake. I asked Norman Gresham whether this, too, was as a result of our investigation.
Not at all. We simply felt that so far as expenditure on Seasnake was concerned, enough was enough.
Wouldn't it have been better to have decided that 3 years ago?
No.
What?
Because 3 years ago, enough wasn't enough.
What is your view of the resignation of Admiral Sir William Torrington Howes, Minister?
Should I have a view?
Well, clearly, when an admiral resigns as a result of being discovered at a business lunch involving nude mud wrestling, that's a cause for considerable concern, I would have thought.
Surely you're not suggesting that the admiral resigned over double booking, are you, David?
Well, then why did he resign?
Well, I understand that he saw his future lay in other areas. Of course, the government are very sorry to see him go. He's a very able man with a good understanding of the industry.
Of course, he hasn't gone very far, though, has he? He's joined Remen Electronics' board of directors.
Yes, we were sorry, naturally, to see him leave the Navy. The government were delighted that he's joined Remen's. He will be an invaluable addition to their team. Already he's managed to pinpoint a gap in Britain's defences, which we intend to plug with a new weapon system.
And what will that be?
Seasnake 2 is a very exciting project which will build on the lessons learned from developing Seasnake 1 and will feature several significant improvements.
Seasnake 1 didn't work, did it?
No, that will be one of the significant improvements we hope to see in Seasnake 2.
Minister, don't you think it's time for some measure of control in the armaments industry?
The armaments industry is an extremely well-run industry, David. It provides a great many jobs for people of this country.
Yes, jobs making weapons, jobs for prostitutes, arms dealers and nude mud wrestlers.
Really, David, people must be prepared to move to where the work is.
So you see no need for change?
The only change I would like to see is an even more aggressive, effective approach to marketing. Then perhaps we'll see Seasnake 2 succeed where Seasnake 1 certainly seemed to slide shitely short of success, you see. Thank you very much indeed.
Clearly, then, there is little inclination on the part of the authorities to effect any major change in the armaments industry. But does that mean a company like Remen's has a completely assured future? Carol Barber again.
No, I don't think Remen's will have it entirely their own way forever. I believe that over the next few years they will face much stiffer competition for defence contracts.
What makes you think that?
Hinton Guidance Systems have started auditioning nude snake dancers.
Delve Special was presented by David Lander with the assistance of Stephen Fry. Studio production was by Jack Claff, Brenda Blethyn and Harry Enfield. With dramatic reconstructions by Felicity Montague, Robert Bathurst and Mark Arden. Delve Special was researched by Tony Sarche and the editor was Paul Mayhew Archer.